From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's the 7th day of August, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois. And then we'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Bennett. He's at the Grain Elevator, located in Windsor. In agricultural news, just one story really for the day. It's all about energy. The biggest part of that story is that U.S. EPA has rejected the RFS waiver request from Texas. We'll have details of that and other energy-related stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear from Peter Levitt. He'll join us to take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. It all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures in the September wheat pit at $8.22 and a quarter, up 56.5 cents on the afternoon. December at $8.47, 56 and a quarter higher. In the March futures, $8.70, up 55 and a quarter. September corn futures, $5.22 and 14 and a quarter the gain. December at $5.42, up 14 and a quarter as well. And the March futures in the corn pit, $5.61 and 3 quarters, up 14 and a half cents. May corn, $5.74. up 14 and 1 quarter. August soybean futures, $12.43, 22 and a half cents higher. September at $12.34 and a half, up 21. And November, $12.39, 17 cents higher. January contract at $12.56 and 3 quarters from the bean pit, a gain of 17 cents today. August bean meal futures, a settlement price at $343.20 a ton, $9.20 higher. August bean oil at $52.09, up 61 for the afternoon. Mercantile exchange side of the CME group, August contract $101.45, down 90 cents for the nearby. October futures at $107.20 for the live cattle, $1.35 lower. August feeder cattle at $114.75, down $1.42.5. September futures were down $1.32.5 at $115.87.5. And the August lean hog futures today, $85.97.5, a gain of $1.57.5. October lean hogs at $76.97.5, 7.5 cents higher on the afternoon. From the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, you're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Have a question about digital radio or digital TV? Come to the WILL Digital Information Fair and Open House Sunday, August 24th from 2 to 4:30 at 300 North Goodwin, Urbana. Get your questions answered, tour Campbell Hall, meet our on-air hosts, and enter to win a digital TV or digital radio. We hope to see you Sunday, August 24th at Campbell Hall.
Here's a quick look at some of the numbers from the outside market. Nearby September crude oil at $119.80 a barrel, now $1.22 higher. September ethanol at $2.22 and 8 tenths, up 6 and 9 tenths. And September natural gas at $8.52 and 6 tenths, down 24 and 7 tenths on the afternoon. The RBOB gasoline at $2.99 and 1 half, that's 4 and 6 tenths. Higher on the afternoon. Heating oil, that's diesel fuel, at $3.23 and a tenth, just about 6 tenths lower today. September propane at $1.73 is down a penny and a half on the afternoon. And gold futures are trading the nearby August contract at $870.70, down $4.90. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at this hour is 138 points lower at 11,517. The U.S. dollar is trading at 74.54, and the CRB index now stands at 399.77. Here's what the forecast for the two-state region looks like. It's really quite short tonight. Clear to partly cloudy across Illinois and Indiana. Lows will range from 54 in the northwestern part of Illinois to 62 in the very far southern parts of the two-state region. Tomorrow, mostly sunny skies. Highs will range from 75 in eastern Indiana to 86 in southwestern Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Joining us now for a look at the futures markets is Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
It was an ugly week up front, a little bit of a bounce today. Is that more than a bounce or just some recovery after steep losses?
Well, I think initially you have to say that it was a recovery or a reaction to probably a steeper than what should have occurred decline this week. I think when I take a look at these momentum indicators, we're starting to see some divergences with price, and that kind of indicates that the decline that we saw here this week was unwarranted. And basically, I think what it kind of is indicating that maybe the trade got too carried away with the bearishness, whether it was from private crop production estimates at this higher end level, and or it was just a finaling round of long liquidation activity that kind of maybe was left over from the month of July. So I think today was a good step in that direction to kind of solidify some stability into this market. And if we would see some follow-through here tomorrow to the upside, a good strong up day tomorrow, I think it would indicate that we could maybe go back to those little rally high points that we had here a week and a half ago, which would be like 625 or so in December corn.
Okay, so at this point, from the close of last week, we're on Friday, we're down about 43 cents, I think. So you're looking potentially, if we can rally tomorrow, a move back to 625. Anything broader than that in the corn pit, given USDA or given the US EPA's announcement today that they were not going to follow through with the waiver request from Texas?
Well, I think that was a step in the right direction, which says that the ethanol demand is going to stay steady and still improve as we go into the next marketing year. Now, the question here is what is the supply number, whether it's, 12.1, 12.2, 12.4, I don't know. I guess USDA will give us a little better idea about what size of crop we are. But it does, what we have, it does, though, show, unless we do see some surprises, that we've got a crop big enough to meet demand this year. And so that's taken a lot of pressure off of the market or the end user of worrying about not having enough inventory around, or we may have to go higher to ration demand. So that alone, I think, will be somewhat of a negative influence to old crop prices. But the function of the market will still be probably what it has been for the last couple of years, is we got enough to get by this year, but we need to grow a bigger crop next year to meet demand. And I think, that focus will begin to kind of take hold here probably sometime after the August crop report, and once we get a little better idea of how big a crop we actually do have out there.
It does mean that we'll add 2.1 billion gallons worth of ethanol or biofuels of some sort to the mandate on the RFS for the 2009 growing season. Would a 12.4 crop be big enough to handle it all?
For this year, 12.4 is going to be plenty big this year. It'll leave us with a fairly, comfortable inventory. But, the market will worry about the 09 production and whether or not we'll the market's going to want to try to talk about it needs 90 million acres. Sometimes the market gets carried away of what it really needs, but that at least seems to be the starting point in a way, or the bidding point, that we need 9 million acres. And if we do need 9 million acres, then probably December 09 corn futures are probably going to go back up toward their highs at some point in time to try to ensure those acres. So I think the strength to new highs in the corn market probably lie with the 09 crop. years more so than the maybe the 08 crop years.
Yeah, as people think about what that high might be for the December 09, it's, $7.07 if I'm picking up the right contract. Looks like I am. So it is sharply higher from where we are, but it's not the $8 level that we made in the December in the contracts for this year.
Right, which was $7.99 and a quarter. And so, I mean, we'll have to, you know, it's hard to see. It depends upon what size of crop we actually have. But based upon the supplies that we have, considering everything equal, old crop futures will probably struggle to see $8. But, you know, I would not rule that out. That the December 09 and beyond contracts could travel up into those areas if the market worries about the 09 production levels.
We gained 17 cents in the November bean pit today, and for the week we're now down $1.26 from Friday to today's settlement price.
The indications, too, that I see on the bean chart is very similar to corn, is that the decline that we saw this week for the first 3 days this week was probably unwarranted from a fundamental point of view. As in the case of corn, it did in beans. We did go down underneath this 200-day moving average. We're still below the 200-day moving average. And that is a little concern because of the index funds do watch the 200-day moving average for long-term trend. And from a technical point of view, they're going to want to see some pushes back above the 200-day moving average, or we could see some much larger long liquidation activity yet to occur in both corn and soybeans.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
I think that's about it.
Okay, thanks, Dan.
You're welcome.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Thursday afternoons.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In today's agricultural news, the state of Texas' request to cut the RFS in half has been denied by U.S. EPA. EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson today made the announcement during the noon hour. As a result, the required total volume of renewable fuels, such as ethanol and biodiesel, mandated by law to be blended into the fuel supply, will remain at 9 billion gallons for this year and be raised to 11.1 billion gallons in 2009. After reviewing the facts, says Stephen Johnson, it was clear the request did not meet the criteria in law. Current law authorizes EPA to waive the national RFS if the agency determines that the mandated biofuel volumes would cause severe harm to the economy or the environment. And speaking of energy, it's pretty likely lawmakers on recess now are hearing about the cost of energy as they head home. Congress, of course, was unable to find common ground on energy legislation before leaving Washington. And the debate should resume when they return next month. But for now, a number of plans and ideas are circulating. The presidential candidates, members of the Senate Ag Committee, and even U.S. Ag Secretary Ed Schaefer are all weighing in. In fact, Schaefer defined good energy policy for reporters yesterday, saying it should include the following.
Opening of exploration and recovery of known resources in this country. It includes tax incentives to put marginal wells, also known as stripper wells, into production. We need to build more refining capacity in this country, and we need to build more distribution capacity in this country. We also have to then, on top of that, continue our millions of dollars of efforts and research for alternative sources of energy and more renewable sources of energy as well.
Nearly 200 representatives believe the U.S. House should have remained in session to tackle the energy issue, voting against adjournment. 40 senators voted against adjournment. And we'll wrap up today's agricultural news a little further south, but still on the American energy front. Arkansas Democrat Blanche Lincoln says Americans are hurting, and it's the responsibility of those in Congress to come up with some answers to the current energy situation. She says that's why the Gang of Ten, that's a bipartisan group of senators, have come up with their own program.
We have come up with a comprehensive proposal that would bring families relief now. We wanted immediacy. We also wanted to be comprehensive. We also wanted to help plan for the future. And I think the plan does all three. It meets all three of those demands that we put on ourselves to ensure that we focused on.
Lincoln notes each member of the Gang of Ten represents a pretty large rural area and says it isn't a coincidence. She says rural America has been hit hardest by high energy prices.
America's working families, particularly in rural states, are desperate. They are desperate in need of relief from these high energy prices that we're seeing. We did studies in Arkansas to show us that in May of this year, we had low-income working families in some of our counties that were spending up to 11% of their very hard-earned income just simply on gasoline, getting around rural areas and the vehicles that you need there oftentimes. But without a doubt, rural America is taking a disproportionate share of the hit in this energy crisis.
The Gang of Ten is hopeful their legislation, the New Energy Reform Act of 2008, or New Era, will serve as a launching point for the energy discussion in September. Among other things, the proposal would expand offshore drilling, extend renewable energy tax incentives, and support nuclear energy. And that's a look at today's agricultural and energy news. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a production of WILL, public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, reminding you of a couple of things. First, always visit our website. The address is willag.org. There you can hear this program, Commodity Week, and even sign up for our free weekend newsletter. Just hit subscribe on the right-hand side of the page at willag.org. Next Tuesday, we'll be on the Illinois State Fairgrounds in the Commodities Pavilion. That's directly across from the grandstand, and we'll broadcast live. That's Tuesday. It's also report day if you have the opportunity and you're at the Illinois State Fairgrounds on Tuesday at 2 o'clock. Come and visit us in the Commodities Pavilion. The following week is Agronomy Day right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Kicks off early in the morning, 7 o'clock, I believe, on a Thursday, the 21st day of August. I'll be hosting that program all morning long and dispatching the wagons into the research fields right here on this campus. Agronomy Day is free. There is a lunch at the noon hour if you'd like to purchase that, and that's a good one usually. But more importantly, you should come by and visit us at Agronomy Day, your opportunity to talk with the scientists and researchers and outreach program specialists right here on the U of I campus. And then the final week of the month of August will be at the Farm Progress Show in Boone, Iowa on the 26th, 27th, and 28th. Of course, that's a Tuesday, a Wednesday, and Thursday of that week. Drop by and visit us in the AgriGold tent, and we'll be broadcasting this program live from the Iowa State Extension tent right there on the Farm Progress Show site in Boone, Iowa. So it's a busy month. We hope to see you as we make our way across the Midwest. Speaking of Iowa, it's a great place to raise hogs, and they raise a lot of them. They've been having some tough times there, and they're not the only ones. It's been happening all over the globe as they're facing really tough economic decisions. Up next, we'll tell you why it means all hog producers around the globe must do their very level best to choose good breeding stock. The high price of feedstuffs, corn and soybean meal in particular, make it imperative for pork producers to do their very best job possible when choosing which gilts to breed. University of Illinois Extension swine specialist Rob Knox says the selection process should be done with the young females when they're between 140 and 160 days of age, and only if their weight gain has averaged 1.2 pounds or 0.55 kilos a day. With the first selection criteria out of the way, the next step is to make sure the gilt is structurally sound and has 12 to 14 evenly spaced and formed nipples. Knox says after selecting the gilts to be bred, puberty induction is an important step. This allows the producer to select fertile females sooner, reducing the number of open days and consequently the amount of feed used before the female becomes productive.
We want to keep gilts in group pens with between 4 and 40 in each pen. We want to avoid crowding and provide at least 8 square feet per gilt. And we want to begin physical or fence line bore exposure using about 20 to 30 minutes of exposure each day, beginning somewhere around 160 to 170 days of age.
Knox says the gilts should not be bred until they've reached a weight of about 300 pounds or 136 kilos and have shown their second estrus or reached 200 days of age.
Typically, these animals that have reached 300 pounds and have reached second estrus will produce more piglets in their lifetime than animals bred at less mature ages.
U of I Extension's Knox says gilts that fail to show estrus by 200 days of age should be treated to induce estrus and bred, or they should be culled. You can learn more on gilt and sow reproduction from Rob Knox on the Managing Pig Production in Tough Times website. It is sponsored by the Illinois Pork Producers Association at www.ilpork.com. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Lernard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Lernard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Thursday afternoon. Usually Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing, joins us. Today he's away, and we'll discuss the cash grain markets with Matt Bennett. He's at Bennett Grain in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Thanks for filling in for Bill this afternoon and for Ellen Dearden this morning. Both of them were away on a Thursday. We appreciate your help a lot. Tell me, first of all, and we can talk a little bit about cash grain, but you're a farmer as well. How do your crops look?
Well, right in here, I think our crops look about as good as they could look. We were able to escape some of the big spring rains, and you know, we really haven't hurt for moisture most of the summer. So I think right in here, in this area, our crops look pretty good, but you don't have to go too far in any direction, really, to see, you know, a lot of big holes in the fields, just like everyone's talking, and there's some areas that are hurting a little bit, but all in all, I think right in here we look pretty good.
Yeah, we started to look pretty good with the corn about a month ago, I guess. Soybeans have caught up finally?
Yeah, they're starting to grow a little bit better than what they have. You know, the last couple weeks really have helped out quite a bit. We've had a combination of some heat and moisture, and it's allowed them to spring up a little, so beans are starting to take shape, you know, and some of the stubble beans are coming along looking pretty good as well.
Have you been out and counting pods yet?
I was in my corn plot yesterday, looked at some different numbers there, but, you know, all in all, in beans, I say, looks like we're going to have a pretty decent amount of pod set. I mean, it looks numbers I'm getting pretty good so far.
And my father told me this week that he'd been out in the bean field, and now Dad's 82, so he's seen a lot of bean crops, but he'd been out in the bean field, and he said he was out earlier, and he thought they'd set everything, and they're still setting pods.
Oh, yeah.
So that's the good deal about planting indeterminate beans. Tell me about the cash grain market very quickly.
Well, you know, today we took corn up 14 cents. You know, I think it's a combination of factors going on today. I think some people were calling it bottom picking, some short covering rally. I think going into the report, there's a lot of people that obviously lately have either been exiting positions or maybe even taken a short position. So, you know, I can maybe buy into the short covering just a little bit more than bottom picking. I think it's tough to say it's bottom picking going ahead of a report like this.
Okay, and do you have bids for the day?
Yeah, our corn bid would be $4.94. Fall delivery would be two cents more, and then on beans we'd be at $12.66, and for fall we'd be right at $12.
Thanks much, Matt. Matt Bennett is with Bennett Grain out of Windsor, Illinois.
It's National Raspberries and Cream Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1782, Andreas Sigmund Margraf died, a German chemist. He discovered beet sugar, which led to the development of the modern sugar industry. In 1783, John Heathcote was born, an English inventor. He developed and patented the lace net machine, which was capable of the complex and yet delicate motions needed to produce lace. His machines made lace hundreds of times faster than it could be manufactured by hand. In 1794, on this day, marks the Whiskey Rebellion. protesting the 1791 federal tax on distilled spirits. A large gathering of rebels in western Pennsylvania burned the regional tax inspector's home. President George Washington ordered 13,000 troops to the area, but by the time of their arrival, the opposition had disappeared. And in 1834, Joseph Marie Jacquard died, a French silk weaver. He was the inventor of the Jacquard programmable power loom for brocaded fabric. His use of punch cards was later applied to census data and eventually input cards in early computers. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Thursday afternoon. Time to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. On the line with us, just off a trip to China, is Pete Levitt, meteorologist. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Yes, good afternoon, Tom.
And tell me about your trip first.
Well, it was very interesting. The main focus of the trip was to see a total eclipse of the sun, which took place over parts of the northwestern China on August 1st. Make it a short story. It was a bit of a cliffhanger with a little cloud around about 10 minutes before totality, but cleared out just in time for a beautiful display of total eclipse and deep blue sky, a two-minute eclipse, which is a little short. It's the fastest 2 minutes I know of in natural phenomenon. And then it was gone. Everybody was pleased. We wrapped that eclipse trip around a general trip from Xi'an in the south, northwestward, all the way to Urumqi in Xinjiang province along the Silk Road, and we saw all of the artifacts of the historical trail of people that were transporting and doing commerce on silk from China back into the Middle East and Europe back in the early part of the second millennium. So that's what we did. It was funny. It was fun. Never rained while we were there. That was a break. But it's long days and a lot of travel, and I'm still trying to get back on sync here.
I believe you probably were on the eastern side of the growing regions. Is that correct? So you probably didn't see much in the way of corn.
No, actually, we were on the western side.
The western side.
Side is what we did see crop-wise. Very interesting. Three dominant crops we saw along almost the entire route. Was corn everywhere.
Oh, really?
Cotton I was surprised to see a lot of cotton, and then grapes were grown in that area for that they produce a lot of the raisins and other fruit, but grapes were frequent. There were some sun seeds here and there, and a little canola, or at least a rapeseed that was grown there. They wouldn't call it canola out there. And finally, I did not see any soybeans, which I thought was surprising. Most of that's grown further east in Manchuria and down there. But they had a lot of corn growing on every square inch of ground available, and it all looked good. The weather, they're very well irrigated, even though these are desert areas. These are parts of the Gobi Desert we were on, and some of the other sandy deserts of northwestern China. But just an amazing transformation of a society that is building, building, building. Every city we've been in has new buildings everywhere.
Well, I've left you just only about 50 seconds, but I think the forecast is pretty easy. What's it look like?
Yeah, it is. It's a good forecast. I think we're going to go through the week with temperatures pretty much the same on a day-to-day basis. Low 80s maxes, maybe low 60s for mins, a few upper 50s. Very pleasant weather for this time of year. Storm system goes by from the western plains across Kansas and mostly to the south of Illinois. Might get a few showers down south of some significance late Saturday or Sunday, but most of the week looks pretty fair. Maybe a passing shower here and there, but just delightful weather for the week. No heat, no drought, no heavy rains in sight.
Well, we're awfully glad that you made it back from China, and I certainly admire your ability to take a trip. And, well, your stage of life. How about that?
Okay. And we won't talk about what that is.
Okay. Thanks much, Pete.
Okay. Right.
Pete
right.
Leavitt is a meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Thursday afternoons. I'm Todd Gleason.